At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself and reflect on these conversations. Today I am joined by Florence. Florence is a Key Stage 2 teacher and mental health activist on a mission to put mental health and well-being at the forefront of her work. Florence joins us today to discuss how to create a safe and inclusive environment for children around food and body, giving a teacher's perspective on the current state of play of concerns in school-aged children. Hello, Florence.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm really excited, actually. I feel like this is kind of a different spin on episodes I've done before, but like a really, really important one that maybe we haven't, you know, we haven't spoken about anything like this. So definitely really excited to get your perspective on things.
Yeah, it's weird. It's not really, people don't really talk about it that much, especially in primary school children. A lot of people focus mainly on like body image with teens and like social media in that aspect, but not a lot of people realize it's actually getting like lower and lower, the age group that it needs to be spoken about with, and teachers that need to be informed at primary age.
Yeah, definitely. Like before we were talking, whilst we were talking before we recorded the podcast, I was thinking about, you know, my own personal experience of primary school, and I have distinct memories of things that I think were triggers for my eating disorder at primary school, but I just didn't know how to manage them. So I guess if we kind of start, like, I'm kind of interested into, you know, why you've gone into primary school teaching. Do you mind just kind of sharing
that first? No, totally. So I actually studied fashion at university. Mm-hmm. And in London, and I spent a bit of time at fashion school and then working for some Instagram influencers and brands like that. And I just felt really like intoxicated by the environment. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I realized that I'm most myself when I'm with animals or children. I have 3 dogs and who I'm always with. And they're like my mental health before school. Like I did suffer from an eating disorder and I'm in recovery and like I need to walk my dogs each day. Like that's just a thing for me. And I don't have a phone on at that time. And I'm just with my mum walking my dogs. And I realized that that's the time when I'm most me. And I feel like I should feel like that all day. It shouldn't just be that hour in the morning. And I was like, well, when else do I feel just like happy? And I'm not saying it's easy and it's all rainbows because it's not. But I just thought I'm going to train to be a teacher. I want to be in an environment where I'm surrounded by people with creativity, with ideas, where we're not scrambling on top of each other like we were in the fashion world and staring at a phone all day.
Yeah.
And I just thought this is the most me. And also I had so much fun in primary school. And I really remember those few teachers that were so much fun. And I just thought if I could be that for someone else, then why not?
Yeah. And that's such a lovely kind of insight into why you wanted to go into teaching. And I always think, you know, you're so right that actually being around children and being around animals, I always find are like the best people to be around or things to be around, because it's almost like their concerns are so like, in the bigger scheme of life, so little, but it just kind of brings you back down to life, into kind of, you know, worrying about the silly things, but actually that is, there's a kind of joy in that and kind of brings you
back down. Definitely, like children coming in like panicked. I'm like, what's wrong? They're like, I left my lunchbox at home. And that's like the biggest thing that could possibly go wrong in their life.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, okay. And you have to take it really seriously because to them, that's a really big deal. And at the same time, you just kind of think that one day they'll look back on this. And if you told them in the future, they'd be like, I can't believe I was literally crying over my lunchbox. And it's just sweet to see.
Yeah.
Nice to console. You feel like you're making a difference. I didn't feel like I was making a difference when I was in fashion or in the social media influencing world or targeting ad people on adverts. I didn't feel like I was making a difference in the slightest of anything. I was deteriorating people's mental health as opposed to inspiring it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just sounds, you know, like now that you're kind of extremely committed to supporting mental health in kind of school age children and, you know, everybody really, but specifically focusing on that sort of age. So I guess what was like your, you know, because people might be a school teacher but not necessarily motivated to support mental health of children, and where was your motivation from that? Where did that come from?
I think it's really difficult. So when I trained as a teacher, we probably had 1 hour over the whole year of training in our PGCE, which is the training qualification on mental health.
Wow.
And we had like 2 hours a week on phonics, which is spelling and reading, obviously really, really important. But there was like 1 hour on like, oh, if this happens, you like might want to refer them to the special educational needs officer at a school. And I work in the state system and we have someone that comes 2 days a week and there are 395 children in my school. Like, it's just not possible. It's just not a thing. And I think it was just this massive gap that we're expecting children to learn when they're in the position of worry or fear or anxiety or stuck in habits that they don't know are detrimental. And we can't expect parents to be able to pick up on everything. I know that I spend more time with some of the kids in my class than they see their parents. And for that not to be a thing and for teachers not to be trained in that is something that's just mind blowing to me. And I just felt like someone in the schools has got to change that. So like, ideally one day I'm going to create a curriculum for doing mental health in schools, because I feel like it should be as important as maths. And it's just not. At the end of the day, we have a calculator. I know that sounds bad, but we have a calculator and we can do sums. But you have no one to tell you not to worry about the tiniest things, not to worry about in your body or how to react when you do feel those things, because they're just natural. So when children do worry about their bodies or do worry about anxiety or bullies or if their parents are going through something, they don't have the tools to figure that out.
It's so important, and it's almost something I think that, you know, we were just joking there about, you know, panicking about your lunchbox or whatever. But actually, I think there does come a point where you do start to worry about, you know, things that as an adult you might consider are bigger worries. But I know when I started to worry about my body and stuff like that, I didn't really know how to navigate it. And I almost didn't know who to talk to it about, or kind of whether it was something that I should have been experiencing or not. So is there anything at the moment in the curriculum that even hints towards supporting that?
I mean, you'd think this would be a really black or white answer. Okay, I shouldn't think black or white. Therapists would not be impressed there. You think this would be a really clear cut answer. Mm-hmm. But it's really not. In the science curriculum for Key Stage 2, so years 3 to year 6, there it touches on healthy diet, and you have to draw like a food pyramid and draw a plate of food with like this many this or this many this, this many this. And you have to do that, but that's all. And then it's really hard because it's all about having a balanced diet and healthy eating. Yet I have so many children that will say, oh, my mum, my dad says that's not healthy. And you'll be teaching them science and they'll be like, that's not healthy. And you'll be like, they'll be like, that's bad for you. And you'll be like, well, and I'm really big on being like, well, there's no good or bad, different things, different times, everything in moderation. And they're like, no, my mum never lets me have that because it's bad. And it's really, really hard because you don't want to overrule those parents. And it's a really fine line between saying, okay, I understand that's what your parents believe, but to shut it down often provokes children saying, oh, well, you're wrong. I don't believe you because my mum says. Well, I don't believe, and their children are so perceptive, like they pick up on everything. And so they'll be like, I've seen my like children say like, oh, but my mum only eats that, or my dad said he couldn't eat that. And I'm going off the point here, I know, but like it's not part of the curriculum in that there's nothing that actually teaches them. I feel like the most they know about body image and eating does stem from their home life, and that is so varied.
Yeah. No, I think it's a really good point that you made, because, you know, I think personally most of my sort of understanding on, you know, healthy eating or my body image or whatever, that did come from home. And I have a really distinct memory, and, you know, as a family we're now able to laugh about this, but it just shows the disorderedness in my family when I was younger. At school we used to have I used to have school meals, and my mum let me have one pudding a week. And the reason she did that was because I also went to my grandma's once a week, and my grandma was a feeder. So my mum had natural concerns about, you know, she didn't want me to be gaining weight and stuff like that. And I went round a friend's house for dinner, and my friend's parent was like, oh, would you like some pudding? And I was like, oh no, because I've been naughty today. And she was like, oh gosh, Hannah, what did you do? Like, what have you? And I was like, oh, I had a pudding already. Because my mum described, you know, having a pudding or whatever as being naughty. So that's the language I use.
Yeah.
And then she was really frustrated because she didn't want her daughter saying when she had, you know, a pudding or a chocolate or something, that it was naughty. So how do you navigate those sorts of communications in the classroom if you've got people saying things like that maybe other children haven't been told?
Oh, yeah. It's really tough, and you can really see from the get-go whose families have hesitancies around food, and exercise is a big thing. So it's really, really hard to navigate. There's no easy way to do it. You kind of just have to shut it down because it becomes a mob mentality. And I often do take it as, we're not talking about that right now. However, if you want to come and speak to me afterwards, like, please come and share that with me, or something along those lines. So, for example, most schools have healthy snacks policy. And so it's hard because every teacher is slightly different. So, for example, children in my class will bring in certain things and I'll be like, yep, that's fine. And then teachers from other classes only let their children have fruit. And it's like this fine balance of what I believe is healthy and what other teachers believe is healthy. And I don't believe that we should be putting that as an umbrella term, like healthy snack policy. I believe we should be giving guidelines. What should you have? We think you should have this, 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 or this. And so it's really hard to shut down those conversations. But I think that you do have children that are perceptive and they pick up on what their parents do. Like, I teach a lot of PSHE, as you can imagine. And I've had a child in PSHE, the scheme that we use, so there's not a set scheme that all schools have to use, like in maths or English, like all kids have to learn this or this. You can use different schemes. So in a scheme that I used at one school, it was really clear on, like, we're going to do a lesson on body image, and that was fantastic. And it was a lesson on the difference between body image and self-esteem, and it touched a bit on eating disorders at age 9, but it didn't go into it. And I felt like it was really well balanced. However, I had a child be like, well, miss, why are people in salad adverts always laughing? And I just said, she said, I've never, and I just looked at her and I just thought, that's a really good question. And they get it. They understand fully what they're seeing around them 24/7. And a lot of them have older siblings. Like, they know what it's like, and they can see different things going on around them and bodies changing. And I think it's really hard to say to them, you actually can't have that conversation in here, but please go home and talk to your parents about it. And it is something I bring up with parents. I would say at parents' evening, hey, your child did think this. I understand those may be your views, but I just want to make you aware that this is what they said to another child who was unsure. And they will have those tough conversations, but it took me a while. I didn't for my first 2 years. I kind of just like, nope, can't talk about that. And now I've gained confidence in being like the parent, actually, I'm worried about your child in this way, not just academically.
Yeah, that's really interesting what you said about the salads and always laughing. Because I think your children are so perceptive and pick up on such little things that maybe you don't even realize you're doing yourself. But where do you think, I mean, I think you kind of said it there with kind of bringing it up at parents' evening, but, you know, in your opinion, where does the line kind of, where is it drawn in your responsibility to educate on, you know, like eating and body image? Because it surely can't all be down to you, but at the end of the day, like you said, you are going to hear messages in the classroom that are difficult.
Yeah, I think it's really hard because I have once brought it up to like my line manager that a child in my class or a child I knew at the school has definitely got a disordered eating pattern that I was worried about. And this drives me absolutely crazy. But unless the child is at a critical level, either obese or extremely underweight, they just are like, nope, it's fine. We're not getting into it because there's no health threat. And I'm like, okay, less than 60% of people with eating disorders are medically underweight, yet alone children. And we're not seeing this. And like 10,000 children were and young people were referred to treatment like April to December last year. And I guarantee you that there were so many calls, like teachers pick up on things, and I know that I've picked up on things. And unless they're clearly underweight or overweight, it's never picked up on. And it makes me really angry because they say, oh no, that's not our issue, we don't have to deal with that. And I've said to someone I work with, as someone who's in recovery from an eating disorder, I can tell you that this child is seeking help and crying out for help, and their parent would appreciate knowing. And they've said, no, we cannot get involved. And so that's something I really, really have a hard time with, because quite a few teachers are really good at leaving their work in the building. That's great. There's no right or wrong. You can, like, I appreciate the benefits of doing that, of going to school, working with the kids, coming home. I cannot let it go. Like, I will take that home with me and it will sink in. And it makes me so angry because I sit and I worry about these children, which isn't good. And I know that. But you do take it personally when it's something that you've been affected by that's changed your whole life, that you know that early intervention could help. And so I've only ever crossed that line once with a parent and spoken to them about the eating situation. And that was when a child was one of those extremes, which is what makes me so sad, because it's not just the extremes that deserve help, it's everyone. And so, yeah, that's one of the hardest things. Sometimes I think, oh, I'm in the wrong job, I need to go and work in the NHS. And it's just like, you can't, yeah, it's really hard. And I have to come home and I say to like my mum and my sister, I said, I don't know what to do about this child. And they're like, there's nothing you can do besides support them in class and help them and be there. And I'm like, I know, but I get so emotional about it, because it's like seeing a little me or little my friends who I know. And you can't do anything. You can't cross that line. Yeah, it's really sucky.
It is hard. And I think me and you are both the same in that when we see somebody, you know, because we have that personal experience, when you see somebody, you're like, oh my God, like, I don't want them to experience the same thing as me and I want to be able to help them. But I think, you know, being able to recognize where you can help and where you can support is so important. And, you know, I was just thinking back, you know, when I asked you then, you know, where do you think your line is, or where you draw the line? Because I had a teacher at school, and this was at high school, but this was when my eating disorder was, you know, getting quite bad. And the first person I went to was my teacher, because she was the person I felt comfortable. I had that sort of relationship because she was my form tutor, in being able to speak to her about it. And, you know, she didn't sit there and say, yes, I can, you know, support you with your eating disorder. She referred me to the mental health team at school, who then referred me to the doctor. So they obviously had a clear process in place. Yeah. But initially, you know, she was the person, because I felt that I was the most comfortable with her. So I think, I'm not saying that teachers have a role in, you know, providing recovery support and helping somebody, but I think definitely, in terms of signposting people to the right place, if a child comes to you, then that's surely, you know, that's surely a responsibility.
if a child came to me, I would definitely tell like our health coordinator and definitely get referred. But I've never had a child come to me with that, and I don't know whether that's because they're not aware of it.
I was going to say age as well, maybe. At that age, would you know?
Yeah, they're young, and I don't think they know. However, like, I do have children that look out for each other, which is what I love. Like, I have children that say they're worried about other children if they didn't eat their lunch one day. They'll come to me and they'll tell me, and then I'll go up to a child and they'll be like, "Are you okay?" And they'll be like, "Oh yeah, I just didn't like it today." And I'm like, "Okay, thanks for letting me know." And I have seen like really, really caring children that do care, so that's great to see. And they look out for each other, and like, I eat lunch with the kids, so because I prefer them than adults.
Yeah. Do you think that, you know, from your experience of working in the school, that is there particular kind of concerns that the sort of age of children you're working with have, or is it quite broad still?
Well, I definitely say that the younger children in the school, so one of my best friends works in Key Stage One, so with 6-year-olds, and with them, it with the younger children, this is obviously a generalization, but it's the boys that say, "Oh, I need to have pecs like Superman," or "Wow, oh, I went to the gym, I went to the gym with my dad in lockdown." Or they'll do a lot of like the flexing of the muscles and be like, "Oh no, I'm stronger than you." Or, and it's the boys that, the younger ones, it's really the boys. The girls seem to be really free at that age and playing and running around. But the boys are always arm wrestling or saying, "Oh, I look more like Superman than you," or, "Oh," drawing six packs on themselves. Like, it's terrible.
Wow.
Like 6 and 7, and then as they get older, the boys kind of retreat into themselves, and the insecurities are still there, but they're inside. And when that's when the girls start to become a lot more perceptive of what they're doing. And like, I read an article this week in the paper about girls not doing as much sport as boys at school simply because they wear skirts. And I literally had to put my head on the table and was like, "Sorry, what's going on?" They were saying how, like, girls don't feel, it was in the Times, girls don't feel comfortable running around because they wear skirts at school. So they are having like higher obesity rates because they don't want to run around in case like they flash their skirt. And I was like, "Sorry, what?" And I know that a lot of the girls at primary school, I was at an all girls school, but we always wore like shorts under our skirts and stuff like that. And I think that as the girls get older, they like, and enter Key Stage Two, they are more self-aware of like what's cool and their bodies and like how to wear their skirt, and they just become a lot more, whereas the boys don't seem to be as affected by it, by the body image in general, as they go into Key Stage Two. It's when they're much younger. But no, I think that with the older ones, it's a lot, like a lot of them have TikTok, a lot of them have social media, and there's a big divide in all classes between the children that are allowed social media and the children that aren't.
Right.
And it's clearly very much conflict. Like, the people who have social media will be friends with each other because they talk all night on social media. The ones that don't will come in and be like, "Oh, how's your evening?" Blah, 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 and stuff like that. And so I think there's that whole divide, and the children that are on social media learn things and tell the other ones, and the other ones are clueless about it. And obviously they're coming from disinformed sources. And so I think that's what most of the focus is on nowadays, is like the social media influx. And it's exacerbated by lockdown as well, because they're on the computer the whole time.
Is there a difference in sort of body image concerns between the ones that use social media and the ones that don't?
The ones that use social media on the whole has much higher concerns about their bodies, and are also far more involved when it comes to conversations in PSHE around body image. And that could be in that, it's in a good way most of the time. They're like, "But they don't look like that in real life. That's an Instagram filter." Whereas the ones that aren't on social media sometimes don't realize those things exist because they're really innocent. So people do say like social media's got a negative effect, and I agree that on the whole it's not good for children's body image. But for those that don't realise that you can Photoshop, they're like, "Oh, I didn't know that." And you're like, "Oh, okay, well, there we go." And they're like, "Yeah, can you really do that? Can you really make your skin clearer?" And you're like, "Yeah, you can do all that." And they're like, "Oh, but how?" And so those children are like, wow, so that's not how they really look. But so it's like good and bad. People don't ever talk about that side of things, that the children that are really innocent, and there aren't a lot of them, but they don't see that you can alter reality.
I almost was thinking as well, I mean, I think it all goes back to balance, doesn't it? Like, you know, ultimately, I think it is good to be exposed to social media, but just not to be on it all the time. But I was almost thinking about the children that don't have social media in the classroom. I can imagine feeling quite isolated, not being able to join in those conversations about things, you know, that you saw on the internet. And I think that would make me feel excluded and then give me quite low self-esteem. And it's horrible that, you know, you would need to go onto social media or whatever to feel included. And I don't necessarily think the answer is, okay, well, let all kids on social media. But, you know, I think one of the main drivers at school for me develop an eating disorder was because I felt like an outsider. And like you're saying, if you're not aware that you can, you know, even if you're not on social media, you're probably still going to see pictures of people that aren't real. And having that awareness that they're actually not real, I would say, is an invaluable skill.
Yeah. So, like your show, when we do that lesson on body image and self-esteem, we show adverts and like airbrushed. Mm-hmm. And it's like, which one do you think's the real one and which ones do you think's airbrushed? And often there's a lot of confusion because some children are like, well, they want to be that, like maybe they want to look bigger or maybe they want to look smaller. And because children have different views, it's actually wonderful to hear the conversations being like, well, maybe they made them bigger, maybe they made them smaller. And you're like, yeah, both of you, but unfortunately this is the answer. But I understand where you're coming from. And I do think there's that sense of wanting to fit in. And I have had children come to me in the past and say, I'm not in on the joke because I wasn't on WhatsApp last night. And that is a boundary as teachers, different schools have policies on. But for example, some schools will say like, you can't, like it's their home life. Like you don't have a say on whether they have social media or not, which is true. And so like sometimes we might say to a parent, your child appears to like to always say they're on the phone at nighttime or always on WhatsApp. But that's as far as we can go with that. Like at the end of the day, it's completely a parent's decision how much they have their phones. And from the minute they come to school, they don't have them. But some children, unfortunately, don't have anyone home with them in the evening. Their parents are working. They rely on computers to Skype friends and call them. Whereas other people are with their families all evening long. And it's just hard to differentiate between what's right and what's wrong. And obviously there's no limit. And no, nothing you can do as a teacher. The only thing you can do is support them in the room. So just in the room, we kind of take all the social media aspect out of things. Like we don't talk about, you don't talk about memes, you don't talk about all those things. And just those conversations go. But they are really receptive to it. Like most of them don't come in talking about the internet or talking about TikTok. But there is that, you can definitely see like the group of kids that bring their phone to school and put them in your desk drawer to lock up in the day of all friends.
I'm actually surprised, I guess, that stuff like memes and things like that aren't included in conversations in the classroom, because it's almost like pop culture now. So I guess that's a really difficult thing to navigate in terms of what to talk about and what not to talk about, because you don't want to exclude people, but then also I don't know. I feel like I'm really struggling to kind of think where I sit on this, because I almost think that children should be exposed to it in order to be able to talk about it, you know, in an open discussion of how it made them feel or, you know, what they think about it. But equally, if children aren't being exposed to it in their home situation, you can't exactly force them into, you know, getting a social media account.
So I think BBC have Newsround, which in my classroom, we watch as a class every day.
Brilliant.
And it's something that that every time that sound comes on, like they could be running around the classroom causing absolute riots. And I put it on the board and I just sit like this. And it's like 4 seconds. I'm like, guys, you can't even do that whenever I do anything else. Like, the minute I put on Newsround, it worked. So once tried, I was like, I'm going to do it again. And it worked in the same day. And then they were like, oh, we've already watched it today. And I was like, yeah. And so we watch it every day and we have a proper discussion about it. Mm-hmm. And that's really beneficial because it does talk about situations going on in other countries. Mm-hmm. And it does talk about, say, like the Disney princess when they made one with glasses. And it does talk about, say, like, I know that it was speaking about Barbie today and how they're making Barbie with a hearing aid and vitiligo. And so it does have really great things that like bring in conversation. And often someone like a child will say, oh, yeah, I saw that on Instagram, or oh, yeah, I saw that on this last night. And it'll be like, OK, I'm carrying on with the conversation. Mm. And I think it keeps everyone at a level playing field. But there are some kids that just know more. But I don't know, maybe it's different at different schools. Like, I'm sure it is. But where I teach the children, they actually just want to play all day. Like, they're still young. Mm. And so although at home and on social media, they may act quite cool and tough, like, get out a parachute and they'll do parachute games all day. Like, they actually just want to play. And that's really nice because I think in lockdown, so many of them grew up way too fast. And now they're kind of getting back to the fact, like, oh, I can just play all day. And it's really nice to kind of be free at school and get out Lego, even at age 9 or 10, which during lockdown, the kids weren't doing.
Yeah. I think that Newsround idea is absolutely brilliant. I think every primary school teacher should listen to that. And
A lot do. Yeah. It's just so good. And then I have like a PSHE box in my classroom, like for questions in general. But then I also have a cultural box, like culture questions box. Mm. So like I've had a child put in a question being like, well, how did Ukraine-Russia start? I just don't understand. And so, yeah, it's actually like a really useful, because question boxes, children often think of for worries and a worry box. And majority of teachers will have a worry box, like, I don't know what to do because this person doing this, or I don't like where I sit in class, things like that. But to have some of them don't know things and they're like, I actually just have no idea. And it's funny because when I read out the questions, like anonymously and explain it, loads of people, I'm like, how many of you didn't actually know that? And there's so many hands popping up, yet one child has put in the question.
Yeah.
So I always have a culture box as well, because I think that it's important and they put their name on it in case it's something I can't answer in front of everyone. Mm-hmm. But if they really need to know the answer, then I will sit down and talk to them about it and whether or not it's appropriate.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that because I think there is so much worry that when you ask a question, everyone's going to think that you're silly.
Many of them are thinking it.
Yeah, like even, you know, not even at primary school, like even in day-to-day life now, like I remember being at uni and there was one girl in my year and she used to put her hand up all the time to ask questions. And, you know, initially you'd be like, oh, here she goes again. But actually, like the question she was asking, you were like, yeah, no one gets this. And thank God you had the courage to ask that. So I think that is...
That's me in staff meetings. I'm like, wait, where is that saved? And everyone's like, oh, yeah. And everyone's like, oh, Florence, I'm always the one that asks the extra question. But I'm like, then we don't have to have another meeting on this.
Exactly. And yeah, exactly. We don't have to all sit there thinking, how the hell are we going to manage this? Something else I wanted to ask you about. I think the boxes that you've just mentioned are brilliant ideas and will really, you know, allow children, if they have any concerns, to ask questions. But I'm just thinking back to when I was at school. Something I found really difficult was PE. I used to compare, you know, at primary school, I used to compare myself all the time, how good I was at sports, but also what my body looked like compared to the other girls in the class. How do you navigate, you know, have you had children come with those sorts of concerns and how would you navigate them?
Yeah, so I've had a lot of children that, girls and boys, that won't wear like shorts to PE. And even when it got to like those really, really hot days, they'd be like, no, I'm wearing tracksuits because I don't want to show my body. And like, I'm a tracksuit lover. The kids know that. And it gets to a point where I would never make a child wear something they don't want to wear or like dislike it. But I don't comment on it. And I purely focus on, wow, you've got them really fast at running. or look, you just did a whole lap without taking a break, and that's all that matters. And I think that we need to pull conversation away from bodies. And so I'm really big on, like, my first day with kids in the class, I'm like, a compliment isn't your hair looks nice. A compliment is like, oh, that what you said was really funny. Or when we do, like, say, if you have to say something nice to each other, it's like, not nothing to do with how you look. And I'm really, really big, and I'm sure I've slipped up on making sure I never say that to children, like, oh, your hair looks nice today. I never say things like that, even if it's something as simple as your hair. If I'm trying to say something to a child, it will always be based on a comment they've made, an answer they've said, or an act of kindness they've done. So say a child, it has got really cute hair today, but I won't say it unless I see, say I say them, like, they're giving someone a ruler. Oh, that was really kind of you to lend that ruler. And I feel like those inner compliments are more important. And I think often we children will say, like, oh, I like your skirt. Oh, and it's fine. It's not a big deal. It's a skirt. But I'm so big on prioritizing compliments that actually you're complimenting someone because they've done something good. Mm. It's not about how they look. And so, I mean, that goes away from your question, but PA is a subject that a lot of children find really challenging because you're deemed good or bad at it from a young age. Mm. And I think that's something that we need to not just step away from, but realize is so dangerous to do to children. Like, I know that I was a really sporty child, and I know that my sister wasn't, and it was always Flo the sporty one. And I've actually never asked that how that affected her, but it's wrong. And I have children that still won't wear tracksuits, and I have children that pretend to be sick on PE days because they're weak. And I have boys that say, I'm not going out to play because I'm not as good as football. And I think that is a whole body comparison issue that stems from something much deeper that we need to break the mold. And I know when I was growing up at secondary school, no girls wore trousers. Mm. You just didn't do it. There was probably three girls who wore trousers, and you described them, it's completely wrong, as, oh, remember that girl that wears trousers? Mm-hmm. Like, it's terrible that that was their identity. And I was... obviously, that was the younger me. That's just what I did. And it's not right of me to have done. But that person was so brave. Mm-hmm. God, they were cool to wear trousers. Like, now I look back and I'm like, wow, what a cool human. How brave and courageous that person was to just break the mold entirely. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just about seeing it as, like, the brave things that children do. Well done, you did pee today, even though I know you really don't like it. Mm-hmm. Oh, great, that child scored a goal. They always score a goal. Great, still a good goal. But that one child that came down to PE, even if they only ran one lap, that was harder for them than the sporty kid scoring a goal. And that's what we need to remember.
Mm. Yeah. It's really interesting, isn't it? Because I think I'm really glad that you kind of said about the comparisons of, like, to the sporty people, because I know that was me, and I used to avoid PE lessons like it was nobody's business, because I didn't want to get changed in front of people. I didn't want to kind of wear the, you know, clothes that we had to wear in PE, but there was nobody to talk to about, you know, I don't want to. And I remember saying, you know, you'd go to your PE teacher and have your forged note that, you know, you'd written because you didn't want to do it, and there'd be no, like, are you actually poorly, or is something going on, like, do you want to have a chat? It was just like a, oh, for God's sake, Hannah, again, like, you know, go and do whatever you want then. And I think just having those conversations to be like, is there actually something going on, you know, if you notice somebody's regularly missing PE, I think would have been, maybe I wouldn't have said anything, maybe I would have been too embarrassed, but it might have just planted the seed of,
yeah,
someone cares.
But also I think quite a few I've seen, like, but two very different types of parents. I've seen parents that will just write the note for their child because their child's unhappy in PE, and that's fine. They don't want their child to be unhappy, and that's their way of dealing with it. And then I've seen the child that you can tell really doesn't want to do PE, but their parent has said, you're doing PE. And it's hard because either way someone's unhappy. But it's just about making PE fun. Like, sport can be really fun.
Yeah.
And it should be really fun. And it's about not taking it too seriously. Like, save the if you want to play football professionally, you go play football professionally. But in PE, we're all working together. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what it's about. And it's hard as a teacher because you have kids that get really, really competitive. And if any of my friends listen to this, hope they do, they'll be like, Florence, you are the most competitive person in the world. And I am. I literally am. But at the end of the day, I remember my PE teacher so well, who I still speak to today, because like with you and your teacher, they were the first people I went to about my eating disorder. I still speak to my PE teacher today. She was my PE teacher from year 6 to year 13. And I still speak to her today. And I remember her being like, it's fun. It's meant to be fun, Flo. And I'm like, yeah, but we didn't win. And it's just about, and it's about making it fun and realizing that that's what PE is meant to be. The same way that children are competitive in every lesson. Like with you, maybe you found sport the hardest, but I have children who say excel in sport, but will sit behind a book in maths and cry because they don't want to look dumb. And I think it's really hard because it's only been exacerbated by lockdown when children were stuck at home with their parents, getting frustrated at them for certain things. And a lot of children didn't do PE, didn't do any form of fitness in lockdown.
Yeah. Well, you could only leave the house for a certain period of time, couldn't you? So exactly. You know, even if they did do, you know, a half an hour of exercise with their parents or whatever, I think back to when I was a kid, and I don't know whether it's changed, but I'd do PE at school, but that wasn't the exercise that I got the most. It was knocking around with my friends after school. I'd be running around for 5 hours until my mum was like, Hannah, please come inside for dinner.
Yeah, definitely. Me too. Mine was weekends. Mm-hmm. And they had no form of that. And I have kids who say like, oh, my parents forced me to do Joe Wicks every day. And it shouldn't be forced.
No.
But then I have children now that are really, really unfit. Mm. And they are upset by it.
It's so hard to find the happy ground, isn't it? I imagine
it's just impossible.
I can't imagine as a parent how difficult it is.
Oh my God.
You want, you know, like you say, you don't want to force your child, but at the same time, if they're not keen on exercise, how the hell are you meant to find something? You know, it's so difficult to find something. I've only found exercise I actually enjoy as an adult. Like as a child, I hated everything. Put me in front of a coloring book and my piano, I'm absolutely fine. Put me, you know, in front of a ball or whatever, like just sod off, I don't want to do it. And I've only found recently like the sports that I actually enjoy, but it's like powerlifting. You can't do powerlifting when you're a child, can you?
Yeah, and like I have children that are like, oh, but I love horse riding. Okay, that's really fortunate that you can go horse riding.
Yeah,
but the inner state school where I teach in London, there's such a disparity between, like, I have a child that was like, well, I worked out every day at my gym in lockdown with my dad. And I was like, okay, that's great. And then I have children that were like, I share a room with my two sisters. Mm-hmm. I don't have space to do Joe Wicks. And I think there's such a it makes me so angry. I don't know what I need to do. I'm like, I need to change the world. Yeah. But it's something that's just really hard. And I do think it stems from parents as well. Like if a parent is really into sport, a child will take to that because more active lifestyle. And that's just natural. It's like if a parent's really into music, a child will take to a more musical lifestyle on the whole. And I know that some parents don't have time. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with food. Like I have seen parents pick up their child from school and the child's had a cupcake because it's someone's birthday in the class. And then being like, oh no, you can't have that because, I have to really bite my tongue. And my co-teachers know that I'm in recovery. They like elbow me like, just breathe, because that child is with their parent. I can't say anything. Mm. And at the same time, I just take it home with me. I just worry about it. It's difficult, but it comes from their parent and it stems from their parent. And I've seen children with parents who have problems with food that they have told me about and said that I know this is coming out in my child, but I don't know what to do. I can't afford help. And that's what, like, to all those parents out there, like, trying to support their children with body image and eating disorders, I think you need to think about your bias. And I can't imagine how hard it is. Like, I know that if I was raising someone small, you have to kind of change the way you are. And you have to change the way you think and the things you say and the decisions you make. And I know I've had friends from treatment centres who have children who said, I'm here simply because I don't want to give this to my child.
Yeah.
I don't want my biases to come off on them. And there are so many books now. Like, that's the best thing, I think. It's like, mm-hmm. I have a PSHE book shelf in my classroom. And the children, it's so funny because I have a sign out sheet and there's all school library books, about 100 in my classroom, school library books. My 20 PSHE books are signed out again and again because they're books by authors who get it. And they're not just on eating disorders, they're on autism, OCD, and they're fiction books. And the children really understand that, like, they can relate to that. And it's often a good bouncing board with their parents to, like, talk about things like that. Yeah. And parents are really receptive. They're like, I want my children to know these things exist. And so I think just the more books, the more films, like, there's starting to be some great resources out there.
Yeah.
And I think it's just about the national curriculum and the Department of Education, which one day I'm going to run, heads up. It's just
please
about
remember me when you do.
Oh, well, don't worry, I'll be right the next thing. We've just met, but that's cool. It's about the Department for Education recognising that I'm spending more time teaching my children how to underline date than I am on how to accept themselves. Mic drop, quote.
Yeah.
But I really am. And that just boils me inside. I don't know if anyone has a solution out there before me and Hannah take on the world and fix it. Feel free to join us.
I think you're so right. I think we've almost got our priorities wrong. Like,
really
the
wrong.
Amount of times I am at work and someone's like, what's the date? And I'm like, I've got no idea. Because it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter what the date is. Yeah. When do you underline the date in your working life? You never do that. Maybe, you know, you put it on the next, that sounds really sad. You put it on a Word document when you're doing meeting
well,
minutes.
But you do, but at the top it says Tuesday the 16th.
Exactly, so you don't need to know. There are so many things. That's what is my bugbear about the education system, is we're taught so many things that, you know, and this might be the wrong answer. I don't personally think it is, but things that we have tools to use. Like you were saying earlier, there is a calculator we can use. Yeah. Yes, I do agree. We need to know maths. I'm not people that say, oh, what's the point in learning about maths? Because I massively think that you do need maths.
Oh, definitely. We need maths. We need English. We need science.
Yeah.
We need these subjects because they're going to stem the creators of the world.
Yeah.
But we also need thinkers. We also need people who believe in themselves. We also need people with self-esteem. Because at the end of the day, once we've got the self-esteem, we can build on the maths and we can build on the English.
And I was going to say was, you know, if you can't do your job because you're completely consumed with mental health issues, what's the point? Like, you know, like you said, if you can't believe in yourself, if you can't engage in something because you're so focused on, oh my God, I what do I look like today? What's my body image? There's no point in you having all those skills.
And it's the same, like, I'll have children sometimes that come to school without breakfast. And again, there's so many different reasons for this. It could be they were in a rush one day, or it could be they can't afford breakfast. And there's amazing companies like Magic Breakfast and all that stuff that are now helping free school meals for children and, like, breakfast before schools, which is excellent. But I'll have children that come in sometimes and are zoned out the whole morning, and I'll say, hey, what's going on? Oh, I didn't eat breakfast this morning. I didn't have time. And you'll be like, okay, that's okay. Well, can you, like, how are we going to make sure you make time tomorrow? Maybe you could get it out the night before, put your cereal in the bowl the night before, set your alarm 2 minutes earlier. And that's one thing I'm really big on, providing solutions, not just saying, like, oh, we'll have breakfast tomorrow. That's not going to help.
Yeah.
But some children will say, like, oh, I couldn't afford breakfast. And I'm like, well, how are we expecting these children to sit in classroom and learn and socialize? I know that they're probably angry. Their emotions are high.
Yeah.
And the first thing, like, I worked at this amazing school that every day someone came round, and it had a very high people premium, so they got money from the government. someone came around every morning and said, who wants half a bagel? And I'd be like, me. But the kids would be so happy because they'd know that they were then, we'd take 15 minutes to have our bagels, but everyone would understand the maths lesson. And it just made the biggest difference. I'm not saying we can rule out, like, you're 100%, I agree with maths, English, all the curriculum. I'm not saying we need to take out any subject. No. I'm saying we need to understand that priorities need to be arranged differently. And spending time that we spend each day doing registration that could be done electronically, we could spend those 10 minutes doing some watching news round.
Yeah.
And I just think it's really sad. It makes me really sad. But yeah.
Well, I think on a more, you know, it is sad, but, you know, I am very confident that there are more Florences out there who are absolutely invested in supporting children and priorities. Yeah. And I think, you know, one positive I do think is that, you know, we're aware of this. I think when I was at school, there wasn't an awareness of these 100%. Sorts of issues. But now there is an awareness. Maybe the curriculum's not perfect, but we're You're making very headway right. towards dwelling. It.
I've dug myself in a hole here. Like, we are doing, I've dug myself. I'm like, why am I like this? I'm like, thinking
about it. No, okay. I want us to end on a happy note.
No, but the thing is, we have, like, I know that when I was at school, teachers wouldn't have been given the space and the freedom to do what I do and so many of my colleagues do now. And I have some amazing colleagues who, and amazing head teachers who, if I say, I'm actually not going to do that today, because they're like, yep, that's more important.
Mm.
And I think that's what's really wonderful. And there are people out there, like, there are so, I could name 1,000 authors and organisations that are actually creating resources. So, for example, in school, when we used to read, I don't know, any classical English book and do English programme about it, there's so many resources out there, like Book Trust and the Literacy Curriculum, that are now making those. So the class reader is about a book, is about a child with autism.
Hmm.
And so that's our everyday English lesson, and PSHE seeps into it. And I do get carried away, and sometimes the children are like, miss, what are we meant to be learning? Aren't we meant to be learning how to structure a sentence? I'm like, oh, yeah, sorry. But I think that as much as teachers can, they do put PSHE into the curriculum. And I know that, like, I know a lot of teachers at my school do look at, like, poverty and geography, and ways to look at, like, racial history and history. And I think that you're right, they are becoming a lot more aware. And I think it's also down to teaching universities. I think they need to kind of put it into their curriculum more, because that's where teachers get their initial ideas from. Because I understand that some teachers don't want to just bring that into their classroom, having not being educated on it. I feel
Absolutely.
Like I can come, like, sometimes I get teachers being like, how do I teach a lesson on eating disorders without, what can I say? What can I not say? I'm like, thank you. Like, we all need to share each other's expertise.
Exactly, and that's what I guess
you try to do with your Instagram, and I try to do with my Instagram, is say, learn from me, but I don't know everything.
Yeah.
But learn.
And we're constantly learning as well. You know, there's topics. Every single podcast I do, I absolutely love, because somebody will come on with something that they're really passionate about. And I'm like, yes, you know, I am the sort of, you know, centrally, I talk about eating disorders, but all the experience that everybody brings, you know, I want to know how to talk to a child about an eating disorder or body image concerns. But from speaking to you now, I'd feel much more confident in, you know, if my niece or nephew came to me, then I would feel confident with that. So I think we're all constantly learning, and that I think is the biggest thing, you know, to take home, is that nobody's got the perfect solution. We've realized that from our conversation today, there is no perfect solution. But I think as long as you're attempting to support those around you, you know, that's all that,
the same with parents. I see parents trying on an everyday basis. Should I say this? Should I say that? Mm-hmm. And that's all that matters. You're never going to say the right thing. I guarantee you, I've said the wrong thing to children 1,000 times. And at first, when you do it, you're like, oh my God, I feel so bad. I've got to go and tell them that comment I said on Tuesday at 11:20 was, and they're like, and there they are, like, not remembering everything. But it's about, like, I don't remember any comments teachers said to me, but some children will. And it's just about trying your best. And that's the same for parents. Like, I can't imagine being a parent in this day and age. I give so much credit to the parents for raising humans. Like humans, I can barely raise them. Actually, no, I can. I'm a good dog mom. But like, humans, they like the same meal through.
Yeah, that's true. I do always think that I'm like, I can barely look after myself, let alone a child. So maybe not. Maybe like, not, yeah.
All of my plants and all of my pets are alive today.
That's true. Yeah, I am a plant mom, and I do very well with that, and I care a lot. So
good work. You know, I'm not as good at the plants as the animals.
Yeah. Well, Florence, honestly, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. I feel like you've given so much insight, so many tips for parents and, you know, anybody working with, you know, a young person. So thank you so much. If people want to hear more from you, get more of those amazing tips, where can they find you?
Oh, they can find me on Instagram, at Growth Not Grades.
Amazing.
So yeah, cool. That's where I'm at. And please feel free to reach out, ask for books, tell me what key stage you're in, what year you're in, what topic you're doing. I'm more than happy to share my lesson plans, all of it.
Amazing. Thank you. Maybe we could, in the show notes, put a few recommendations of books for the different key stages. I think that would be really good. And then, that's so kind of you to share your lesson plans and stuff. I'm sure that would be really helpful for people.
Yeah, thank you, Hannah. This has been amazing. And what you do is just incredible. Your podcast is just fantastic. The amount of people I've told to listen to it.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Yeah, what you're doing is super cool.
Thank you. If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode. So be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.